What's goody?
We're back.
Long time no talk.
Not that long.
Long time no listen.
It's not that long.
We hope every single one of you had a wonderful holiday with your friends, your loved ones, whoever you spent the Christmas with, what have you. But the new year is closing in. Literally, in like tomorrow, I feel like. And honestly, I can't tell if I'm excited or anxious.
I'm excited. It's the year of twos, people.
It is. This is a big year.
And you know,
two is my number.
This is a huge manifestation year because, did you know, on February 22nd, it's going to be 2-2-2-2-2-2. And it's on a Tuesday.
Yep. So, take it off.
Get your list ready.
Go ahead and RTO for that bad boy. But whether you've made New Year's resolutions or think they're complete crap, this week's episode is going to be curated around how to be happy in this upcoming new year. So let's not waste any more time. Grab your drink, grab your snack, and let's get into it.
Oh my God.
So, I was at the library.
You were?
As I always am.
She's smart.
And I was in the self-development and economics section, as well as like the business area. And I saw this book, and it was like super bright. The cover was just white, but all the letters are bright orange on it. Mm-hmm. And it just said happy on the binding. It caught my attention, and I picked it up. So, it's called Happy by Ian K. Smith. And when I brought it home, I started the book and I couldn't put it down. So since it's about to be 2022, we thought we would dive into the study surrounding happiness and how you can make the most of this upcoming new year. But I also want to highly recommend getting this book and reading it for yourself, because everything that we're about to talk about in this episode are premises from that book. Ian K. Smith is a doctor and he's a New York Times bestseller. So let's dive into it.
As most of you know, our culture is obsessed with the negative. And if you didn't know, now you do. Surprise! So much of our country's focus has been on reporting and understanding the negative behaviors and patterns of human beings rather than understanding and accentuating positive behaviors. Walk by a local newsstand and scan the headlines. Infidelity, alcohol, drug addiction, financial embarrassments, murder, whatever. We are bombarded with detailed reports of the misery that others are suffering. In the 1990s, the modern era of positive psychology was born, which is the branch of psychology that studies happiness. For decades now, psychology has focused on human disease, such as depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, anxiety, and how to treat them. But not many researchers were thinking about what it was that made people happy and whether these causes could be applied to others as a roadmap to happiness.
So what is happiness? We figured we would just start with the actual definition, which is a state of well-being and contentment, also a pleasurable satisfaction. Basic enough, right?
Right.
The experts suggest that happiness becomes more sustained and impactful because of the characteristics surrounding the experience, as in meaning, pleasure, and engagement. Martin Seligman, one of the fathers of positive psychology, defines happiness this way. I believe happiness dissolves into three different ideas, each of which is separately buildable and measurable. The first is the pleasant life, which is having as much positive emotion and as little negative emotion as possible. The second is the engaged life, or being completely absorbed by the challenges you face at work, love, play, etc. And the third is the meaningful life, as in knowing what your highest strengths are and using them to belong to and serve something that is bigger than you are.
Are you ready to hear about a cool little study called the Happiness Thermostat?
I love it. Let's do it.
Researchers have tried to figure out how much of the happiness we experience in this life is determined before we are born, and how much is actually in control after birth. One of the most famous experts in the study of positive psychology has spent years conducting his famous study of 1,500 pairs of twins. He concluded that as much as 50% of our happiness is determined by our gene, which is called the happiness set point, and the other 50% is determined by the circumstances of life. So after this discovery, three other experts in this field wanted to see if the 50% happiness related to the circumstances could be broken down even further. They discovered that the intentional activity that's under our control in our lives contributes to 40% of that 50%. The other 10% that controls our happiness are the circumstances in our lives that are completely out of our control. So for those who have believed that they were just born unhappy, this is encouraging because that means 40% of your happiness can be controlled strictly through your own actions and your own thoughts.
I thought it was really interesting. It makes sense.
It's really, really interesting.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about owning your happiness, which was a huge premise in this book. So achieving ultimate happiness means owning it. Too often, we allow other people or situations to control our quest for happiness. Disappointments in life are going to happen regardless of how happy we are. But the key is how well we control the impact that those disappointments have on our overall happiness. There are some things in your life that you can't control. For example, you can be the best parent that ever lived and provide a nurturing and supportive environment for your children. But sometimes a child may go out on his own and, despite all your teachings, make decisions that lead to trouble and failure. Even with your best efforts, you can't always be there to make decisions for your children. At some point, they are going to think and act for themselves. You have to own your happiness so that the actions or inactions of others doesn't destroy your happiness completely.
Right. Your children, once your children become an adult, even though you're still their parent and still want to guide them and teach them, and most parents want to prevent decisions or choices from being made, you can't.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that you're any less of a parent or a person for doing so. Your children are going to make their own decisions. So blaming others for your unhappiness is as ineffective as being dependent on others for happiness. A critical component of happiness is being realistic. Say it again. A critical component of happiness is being realistic.
Realistic.
A healthy dose of realism informs us that no one can or should be happy all the time. I don't think anybody is.
Right.
But it is absolutely normal and beneficial to have periods of sadness. Being sad is a part of a healthy emotional existence. Concern should arise only when the level or length of sadness is disproportionate to the situation or when the intensity of the unhappiness gets in the way of a person's ability to function normally, aka depression, things like that. Don't feel bad because something happens that upsets you and puts you in a bad mood. The key is how fast you can get through that mood and move on into a more positive space. It is not, and I think we've probably said this once before, life, correct me if I'm saying it wrong, but life isn't always about what happens to you.
Right.
It's about how you react to what happens to you.
Right. All you can control is how you react.
It's how you react.
You know? So we're going to tell you about something called the happiness test. This is pretty cool. So it's not easy to measure happiness. We know this. But psychologist Ed Diener and his colleagues at the University of Illinois have created what remains to this day the gold standard when it comes to happiness self-assessment tests. He developed a test as a means of measuring global life satisfaction. In other words, how happy someone is with his or her life. Its official name is called the Satisfaction with Life Scale, and the test typically takes no more than a couple of minutes to complete. This test has been used by experts all around the world. So, how happy are you? We're going to provide a free direct link to this test in our Instagram bio, so make sure you go to @co.signpodcast, click on our Linktree link, and take the test to find out. And I did show Mackenzie the test before we started, and it's literally like 7 questions.
Right.
And it's been used by professionals all over the world. Super easy. You should go take it.
Page 3 of that document when you click on that link.
Yeah. And it's just a standard PDF file. It's not a virus.
This is not LimeWire, people. Another important key to happiness is to play to your strengths, okay? Do you know your talents? Do you know your strengths? And do you know the difference between the two? The answer to these 3 questions can be essential to your happiness. And it's all about knowing who you are and finding the best way to apply yourself so that you find success. Playing to your strengths is the best way to handle difficult situations, and by applying your strengths creatively, you can increase your happiness and sense of well-being.
So according to leading positive psychologists, moral traits such as integrity, fairness, and loyalty are strengths. Talents such as artistic ability, athletic ability, and music ability don't have anything to do with moral traits. Both talents and traits are qualities that can be enhanced and built on in a significant way. However, you can do more with moral traits than with talents, as in you can become dramatically braver and more creative in your approach to life. When it comes to talent, you can improve on your ability, but the level of improvement may not be significant when compared to your baseline abilities. Talents are abilities brought to the surface as we begin to use them when pursuing various activities. Strengths, on the other hand, are personality traits that can be acquired through active intentions such as practicing, reading, or learning from teachers. Just because we weren't born with certain personality traits doesn't mean that we can't develop them, essentially.
Right. And lastly, there is a big difference between talent and strengths when it comes to choice. There are many choices when it comes to strengths. You can decide whether you want to have a particular strength, whether you want to develop the strength even further, and whether you want to use that strength at all. Understanding your strengths is important because research has shown us that one way to increase your happiness and life success is to spend more time using those strengths. The leading psychological researcher, Richard Sternberg, developed a revolutionary concept called successful intelligence. His premise is simple. We should spend as little time as possible on our weaknesses and most of our time on our strengths. He found that people who are most successful are not necessarily those who have the highest IQs or GPAs, but instead are people who know who they are, who know what they're good at, who work on developing and using those strengths.
So, and you know, we love this. Happy people exercise. Beyond its physical and health benefits, exercise can actually make you happy. Scientists describe two important chemicals that are involved in the positive effects we can get from exercise. The first is cortisol, a hormone that the body produces under stress. When you are angry or anxious or fearful, your adrenal glands produce cortisol to influence changes in the body that will help you adapt and eventually overcome whatever you are currently experiencing.
Right.
That's called the fight or flight response. But too much cortisol can be a problem and have negative effects that can ultimately inflame and damage your organs. Exercise burns cortisol, making us healthier and happier.
Hmm.
Protect your organs.
Maybe that's why I'm unhappy. I need to hit the treadmill. Just kidding. The second group of chemicals is called endorphins. Maybe you've heard of them. These are often called the body's natural happy chemicals because they can decrease the effect of pain and control feelings of stress and frustration, as in they make you feel good. Have you ever thought about what causes runner's high? That state of pure euphoria some runners experience? Both are largely caused by endorphins that are processed in the brain and can be more powerful and yield a greater euphoria than opiates like morphine.
Isn't that crazy?
I believe that, though.
Yeah.
I believe that. Exercise can stimulate the small pituitary gland in the brain to release endorphins, whose effects can be felt even hours after the exercise is over. Which,
we can attest to that.
Especially, right, people who go and work out in the morning, they go, really, anybody who works out ever.
Mm-hmm.
You're tired when you go into it. You may not feel good. You may not feel like doing it, but you do it anyway, and then you feel amazing after.
One thing you're never going to wish you wouldn't have worked out.
Right.
Like, it's not possible, even if you feel like shit. Okay, so I was super excited about this part to see your reaction to this concept because I'd never heard it put this way.
Okay.
And I really, really like it. So this is called the concept of flow, and I'm going to explain what flow is. So athletes talk about the times when they play so well that they can't seem to do anything wrong. They are focused, determined, and completely in the moment, an exceptional moment when they're at peak performance. Everything goes their way, and they call it being in the zone, right?
Right.
The psychologist that studied this phenomenon called the concept flow. He describes it as a mental state of operation achieved when a person is fully engaged in what he or she is doing. It is a feeling of energized focus, full involvement, and success in the process of the activity that is being undertaken. Flow is the optimal experience. It occurs when one is performing at his very best while immersed in a challenging task that demands intense concentration and commitment. Researchers have found that those who experience flow frequently are much happier than those who experience it only occasionally. But the happiness you get from the state of flow is different from the happiness of buying a new pair of jeans or watching a good movie. The happiness of flow is deeper and longer lasting. According to experts, it is the full involvement of flow rather than happiness that makes for the excellence of life. We can be happy experiencing the passive pleasure of a rested body, warm sunshine, or the contentment of a serene relationship. But this kind of happiness is dependent on favorable external circumstances. The happiness that follows flow is of our own making, and it leads to increasing complexity and growth in consciousness.
It's basically like when you're so in the zone, whether it's working or homework or studying or whatever, and you find like something just finally clicks mm-hmm. when you're studying, or you're being so productive at work that you're just knocking everything out.
Yep.
So like that makes sense.
Have you seen the movie Soul on Disney Plus?
I don't think so.
Okay, guys.
S-O-U-L?
Mm-hmm. So, I recommend watching this. It's a cartoon, like it's a Disney movie, but this concept happens in that movie. He plays the piano, and basically at the beginning, he dies. Anyway, it's about his soul trying to get back to his body because he doesn't feel like he's fulfilled his life.
Okay.
And so he finds this realm of this world where people who are still alive, that basically when they enter flow is the only way they can come to this world. And so that's what it reminded me of, because he goes into flow and he can go into this world when he plays the piano for
gotcha. Him.
He's really passionate about jazz music. And so that's what it made me think of. If you haven't watched Soul, go watch it, because it's going to pull at your heartstrings.
Oh, I'm going to have to watch it. Now, you may have heard what Sam just said and was like, okay, well, I'm not an athlete. Don't worry. You don't have to be an athlete to achieve the state of flow. Gardeners, writers, painters describe it frequently. We all have the potential to experience it if we meet some of the basic requirements. Number one, clear goals. The rules must be easily understood.
Number two, matched challenge and skill level. And I think this is one of the most important on this list. You have to be involved in a challenge that is just beneath or equal to your skill level. You can accomplish the task at hand, but it's going to take all you've got to do so. If the challenge level doesn't match your skills, then you need to make adjustments. For example, if the challenge is too easy, you get back to flow by increasing the level of difficulty. If the challenge is too difficult, then you must learn new skills that will help you meet the challenge. And one of the best ways that they described it in the book, they talked about how someone's just learning to play the piano, for instance. When they play their first full song, they can go into flow with that. But as they get better, if they've been playing for 5 years, they're not going to feel flow from that same achievement because they're better.
Right.
So you have to keep elevating your skill level. Yeah.
Number three, distorted sense of time. Time passes and you don't even notice it. Minutes become hours, and because you are so absorbed, you have no idea how much time has passed while you've been in the activity. And I don't want to hear the whole, time passes when you're having fun, time flies. Are we really having the time of our life? Anyway.
Number four, disappearance of the unrelated. People in flow also have a tendency to be unaware of what's going on around them. Very few, if any, of your thoughts are related to anything other than the task at hand. It is almost as if the rest of the world dissolves into a quiet background noise that you can't hear and do not care about.
Number five, in control. You are not afraid of being out of control because you know that you can control the situation or activity if necessary.
Number six, effortless. While the challenge might be difficult, you feel the task at hand is effortless. Succeeding in the activity itself is rewarding and far outweighs the external rewards that might be waiting for you.
Number seven, intense concentration and focus. You must reach a high degree of concentration on the activity at hand so that you can focus sharply and dive deeply into said task.
Number eight, loss of self-consciousness. Actions and awareness merge, and there is no time for self-monitoring or self-criticism.
Number nine, direct and immediate feedback. The instant feedback of your successes and failures while performing the activity are obvious, so behavior and decisions can be adjusted as needed. This is true when playing a game of chess, poker, tennis, as well as other involving activities such as painting, gardening, and playing the piano. A tennis player knows after each shot whether the ball went where he wanted it to go, just as a pianist knows after each strike of a key whether the note sounded the way it should. Everyone is capable of flow. It is possible that you have already experienced it and didn't even know it. One important thing to remember, however, is according to experts, it works to the advantage of the person in flow to not acknowledge happiness during the challenge. It would only serve as a distraction that could potentially throw one off and lead to failure.
So I have a question.
Okay.
Do you think you've ever been in flow before?
I don't know. I'm sure I have at some point, but off the top of my head, I don't know. Like, I would have to, whether it would be work-related or or in high school when I was doing like extracurricular activities right. or something like
when I was cheerleading.
Just kidding. I'm sure I have. What do you think you have been?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely with music for sure. That and I feel like I've gone into it at work.
Yeah.
When it talks about how you feel like, you know, everything's going right and you're getting everything done. Yeah. I think so. I've probably been in it more than that, but off the top of my head, that's what I'm.
Isn't it sad that we just have to relate it to work?
I know.
That's stupid. That's stupid.
Another reason why I needed to read this book.
We're back. All right. So, a group of social scientists and psychologists wanted to standardize the concepts of virtue and strength. They looked across 3,000 years of culture and religions and tried to identify the core virtues that can be found in almost all of them. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
These six universal virtues were wisdom, courage, humanity, justice, temperance, and transcendence. Taken together, these virtues are the concepts of good character. This is where our strengths, just like we talked about in part one, this is where those come into play and play a leading role. 24 signature strengths have been defined and accepted. The key is to figure out which ones apply to you more than the others do. At least five that sound the most like you, and you'll find your five signature strengths.
So we're going to break down all of these for you.
All okay? of them.
So the first virtue is the virtue of wisdom. And there are six fundamental strengths under this category. So number one, curiosity, interest in the world. You are not hung up with preconceptions. You are open to new experiences and you take a flexible approach to things. You don't just tolerate ambiguity, but are even intrigued by it and like it. You like to explore and discover.
The second fundamental strength of this category is love of learning. You have a love of learning new things, whether it's formal settings, such as class or a seminar, or informally, such as on your own. You enjoy being an expert in a particular field or being in a position where your knowledge is valued by others. Your learning is not incentivized by any external reward. Rather, you enjoy learning it just for the sake of learning.
And number three, judgment, critical thinking, and open-mindedness. So you're a deliberate thinker, someone who doesn't rush to judgment. You take your time to think things through carefully. You examine issues from all sides and make decisions based on reliable evidence that you weigh fairly. You are not someone who locks into an unchangeable position. If the evidence contradicts a previous position you've taken or are currently taking, you are willing to change your mind.
Number four of this category, ingenuity, originality, practical intelligence, or street smarts. You rarely settle for doing things the conventional way, and you excel in finding new and different ways to approach problems and to achieve goals.
Number five, perspective. This is the strength closest to wisdom. You are sought after by others who want to use your experience to help them solve problems and gain perspective. Your way of looking at the world makes sense not only to yourself, but to others as well.
And lastly, in this category, social intelligence, personal intelligence, emotional intelligence. You possess a good understanding of yourself and others. Not only do you have an awareness of the motives and feelings of others, but you can respond well to them. You are very good at judging moods, temperaments, motivations, and responding appropriately. You are in touch with your own feelings, and because of this, you can understand and guide your own behavior. You also have the keen ability to put yourself in settings that maximizes your skills and interests. You choose work, your intimate relations, and your leisure to put your best abilities into play every day.
I think that's both of us.
Yeah. Maybe I do have a virtue of wisdom.
Just one.
Just one virtue.
So the second virtue we're going to talk about is the virtue of courage. So we've got three strengths for this one. Number one is bravery and valor. You don't back down or succumb to threats, difficulty, challenge, or pain. Even when certain situations are unpopular or dangerous, you are prepared to take them on. Your bravery is also evident in your ability to overcome fear. When faced with danger or a perceived threat, the normal reaction is fight or flight. You are someone who resists the urge to flee. Instead, you stay and deal with the fearful situation. Valor, among other things, refers to moral and psychological courage. Moral courage means a willingness to take stances that are unpopular and likely to come at a cost. Psychological courage includes the stoic and even cheerful stance needed to face trying situations.
I like that one.
Me too.
Number two, perseverance and diligence. You are someone who finishes what you start. You take on difficult projects, not only finishing them, but doing so with a positive attitude and few complaints. You do what you say you're going to do, and sometimes you do even more. You are determined to reach goals, but you are reasonable and do not let goals turn into blinding obsessions. You are flexible, realistic, and ambitious.
And number three, integrity, genuineness, and honesty. You are an honest person, not only in telling the truth, but in how you live your life. You make your intentions known and you honor your commitments. You are someone who is down to earth and relatable, as well as genuine and authentic. You live without pretense.
Do you have a virtue of courage?
Yeah, I relate to some of those things. Not all of them in every category.
Right.
You know.
The third virtue that we're going to talk about is the virtue of humanity and love. So number one, kindness and generosity. You are kind and generous to others and try your hardest to do favors for those who request them. Doing good deeds for others gives you a pleasure and joy. You realize that others should be respected and you believe others also have worth. This leads you to consider their best interest in your decision making, even when your personal desires might be in conflict.
And number two, loving and allowing oneself to be loved. You place a high value on close relationships with others. Those whom you have deep feelings about feel the same way towards you. What is also important is that you allow yourself to be loved.
That's important. The fourth virtue is the virtue of justice. The first one in this category is citizenship, duty, teamwork, and or loyalty. You are a reliable teammate who functions very well in a group. Loyalty and dedication are attributes that make you an excellent team member. You do not depend on others to do your portion, and you carry your own load. You work hard, even going the extra distance, sometimes to bring success to the group. There is a saying, there is no I in team. You embrace this philosophy and thrive in collaborative relationships.
Number two, leadership. You're a good organizer and you make sure that plans are carried out. You're able to promote and keep good relations between group members while being an effective leader. You are also skilled at handling relations between your group and others.
Number three, fairness and equity. You are able to keep your personal feelings and possible prejudices in check and not allow them to bias your decisions about other people. You give everyone a fair chance and allow your larger principles of morality to guide you. The welfare of others, even if they're strangers, is as important to you as your own well-being.
And the fifth virtue we're going to talk about is the virtue of temperance. So number one, prudence, discretion, and caution. You are a careful person and look before you leap. You avoid saying or doing things that you might later regret. You typically wait until all options have been fully considered before taking any course of action. You are able to look ahead by resisting impulses for the sake of long-term success.
Number two, humility and modesty. You neither seek nor want the spotlight, but instead prefer to let your accomplishments speak for themselves. You don't see yourself as special, and others comment on and respect your modesty. Your humility allows you to see your personal aspirations, successes, and failures as relatively unimportant.
And the last one for this one is number three, self-control. You are well-disciplined and can easily hold your desires, needs, and impulses in check when necessary or appropriate. When something bad happens, you are able to control your emotions and even cheer yourself up when facing a difficult situation. You're able to turn around and neutralize your negative feelings.
Last but not least, the sixth virtue that we're going to discuss is the virtue of transcendence. Number one, gratitude. You are aware of good things that happen to you, both small and large, and you don't take them for granted. You take the time to express your thanks, and you appreciate the goodness you find in others.
Number two, hope, optimism, and future-mindedness. You have a positive outlook for the future and expect good things to happen. Not only do you think the best is yet to come, but you plan and work in order to make it happen. You lead a goal-directed life with a focus on the future.
Number three, appreciation of beauty and excellence. You take your time to appreciate and enjoy the good things in life. You are the type of person who appreciates beauty, excellence, and skill across the various spheres of life, whether it be sports, singing, art, or intellectual pursuits.
I feel like that's both of us.
Yeah.
Number four, forgiveness and mercy. If you are wronged, you're able to forgive. You give people a second chance. Your actions tend to be guided more by mercy than revenge. You not only forgive those who have offended you, but are able to show them empathy and compassion.
I want to circle back to that one once we're done.
Yeah.
Number five, playfulness and humor. You enjoy a good laugh, and it pleases you to make others smile. You don't take yourself or life too seriously, and you enjoy taking a break from work to play. That's me.
Yeah, for sure. Number 6, zest, passion, and enthusiasm. You're someone who's energetic, spirited, and passionate. When you do something, you go full steam ahead. You wake up in the morning excited about the new day and look forward to what's coming. Others can feel your passion when they're around you.
And last but not least of this virtue is spirituality, sense of purpose, faith, religiousness. You strongly believe that there is a higher purpose and meaning in this universe. You recognize and accept that while your life is important, there is a bigger force than you. You are aware of your position in the world and in the larger scheme of things. Your beliefs guide your actions and provide comfort to you.
I like that one a lot too.
Yeah. One to circle back to forgiveness and mercy.
I'm not good with that one.
As I've gotten older,
I'm not really a second chance giver.
Not anymore.
I'm not.
Now, I'm not necessarily a second chance giver, but I've learned to forgive now and just move on. Before, yeah. I was quick with, how can I get back? Mm-hmm. What am I going to do?
And now as an adult, like I couldn't give a shit less about getting revenge on you.
Right.
Like, I really just want you out come of
back.
My life.
Right. It'll come back to you.
Like, for real. No, that I was, that's funny because I was going to bring that up when we read it. Same mind.
Yeah. Some of these as we were reading, I was like, oh, I feel like I relate to that one, mm-hmm. or maybe not that one so much. So yeah. I like these a lot.
Yeah. And if you go and actually look up the virtues and stuff, there's a whole thing. They tell you, if you listen to these, pick your top 5 of the 24 and focus on those top 5 things and how you can improve your skills in those areas and make goals basically around your top 5. Yeah. So another concept we were going to talk to you guys about is the benefits of optimism. A lot of people, and I have heard this said, and I know that you have too, and I can't stand it. A lot of people misunderstand optimism. They think that someone who is optimistic is always happy and never gets discouraged. This is complete bullshit.
Bullshit.
Okay? An optimist is someone who can look at a situation, assess it for what it really is, and if it's negative, find a way to see at least parts of it in a positive light. Optimists tend to explain positive events as having happened because of them, not because of some random outside force. For example, if you met and networked with an important business contact at a party, the optimistic view is that you were smart to go to that party. The pessimistic view would be that you just happened to be in the right place at the right time, and all thanks to luck, you got the contact.
Right.
An optimist is positioned well to meet success. Negative situations and results are more likely to roll off their back, and rather than drag them down, they shake off the bad experience and prepare for something more positive. Optimists are better positioned to grab productive opportunities. They believe in their ability to make good things happen, and their general mindset is that there is more good than bad in life.
It's like the glass is half full, mm-hmm. versus half empty kind of people.
He has a whole chapter, literally, that's what it's called.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Optimists are happier people in all realms of life. Research has shown this to be true. But unfortunately, many people dismiss optimism as some soft, fuzzy, deluded perspective that is out of touch with reality and delivers little benefits. Some have even gone so far as to argue that optimism is nothing more than a sham to make people feel better about their undesirable circumstances.
And I've heard people say that.
I don't agree with that.
I don't either.
But according to the research, optimists are happier simply because life does not knock them around and damage them the way it does pessimists. Going a step further, the positive disposition of the typical optimist also means that the impact of life's most difficult situations hurts less and does not last as long as it does for people with a doom and gloom outlook. Here's what the research on optimism has shown. Are you ready? Number 1, optimists are persistent and believe that adversities can be overcome.
Number 2, optimists are healthier and live longer overall.
Number 3, they bounce back more quickly from rejection and setbacks.
Number 4, they tend to be more productive on the job.
Number 5, optimists try harder because they believe they have real control over the outcome of the events.
6, they believe they will frequently achieve success.
Number 7, they are less likely to quit their jobs.
And 8, last but not least, optimists handle change better, which allows them to adjust to a changing environment more easily. So guys, get off the sidelines.
Get it off.
Okay? Get off the sidelines. We ain't playing the bench this year. Get into the game, okay?
We are starters, yes, people.
Starting players. Life is not a spectator sport, and too many of us are content with the status quo, preferring the comfort of what we know rather than the challenge of discovering the unknown. The happiest people are those with the fewest regrets. It's not because they have succeeded in everything they've tried, rather they're happier because they at least put forth the effort, win or lose, and tried to make their thoughts and dreams a reality. So I have one last question for you. Do you think you're an optimist or a pessimist?
I think overall I'm an optimist. Do I have pessimistic qualities? I'm sure I do.
We all do.
I'm sure at some point I'm like, oh my God. But I feel like overall, just my personality, I'm more of an optimist.
Yeah, I think you are. I think I am too.
Yeah.
I mean, even as a child, I remember always thinking like I could do whatever I wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah,
your parents told you.
We were lucky to have good families that instilled that in that,
yeah.
You know, but.
But even just not even about dreaming or like thinking like, oh yeah, I can do whatever I want or I'm going to do it. It's not I can do whatever I want. It's if I do, I know I can succeed at
right.
it. And if you do it, try something new or what have you. You're not all, oh, I just happened to get lucky and show up to this activity
right.
and that's why I did a good job or mm-hmm. whatever the crap that is. Have you ever been around somebody, and we both have, where you're like, oh my God, like complain some more.
Right. About everything.
Like, and my favorite thing to say is someone's like, well, that's not going to happen. Well, not with that attitude.
Right.
Not with that attitude, it's not going to happen.
Right. No, but one of the things I love from this book, Ian Smith said that as a child, he always remembered his grandma, no matter what happened, she would always say, it is what it is, now we move on.
Right.
And that is so true for, like, everything in life.
It is what it is.
Now move the fuck on. All right, guys, that is all we have for this week's episode.
Yay!
And you already know the drill. Go follow us on Instagram at co.signpodcast. Click the link in our bio to rate and review us on Apple. And don't forget, as we speak, Mackenzie is adding the link to that happiness test in our bio as well under our link tree. So don't forget to go to the library, go to the bookstore, go to Amazon, and make sure you pick up Happy Simple Steps to Get the Most Out of Life by Ian K. Smith. And as always, we will see you guys next week, and we hope you have an awesome new year.
And we'll see you in 2022.
Bye.
Oh my God. Oh my God.